I'm Henry Lynn.
I'm Madeline Wallace.
And welcome to Better World. Better World is an exploration of badass people doing really cool things. The more we know about this world, the better we can do in changing it. Hi, Matt.
Hey.
What, you're rolling your eyes at me already? It's because it's Valentine's Day and I didn't get you anything, isn't
right?
it?
Right. Here we go.
Shout out to Dawn Gallagher, who thought
Turbo
we were married.
Turbocharged.
If you guys...
V-Day tension episode. V-day, let's go.
Heavy tension episode.
I will be rejecting even more today. Just beware.
It's a flat out
literally
boundary of no-no.
A boundary of no.
It's a hard no.
One look. I'm not even going to be verbal about it. Just anyway, here we are today.
So... tune into next episode for nonverbal communication between Maddie and Henry.
Yeah, right. Okay.
10.5 million tons of textile waste go into the landfills every year. 85% of garments are not recycled. 15% that are recycled end up going to as exports to other countries, typically developing world, and saturating their markets, causing the decline in some of their micro industries, such as textile production, you know, hand wovens by nice folks. Here with us today is Samantha from the Vintage Twin, somebody who's on the forefront of getting us to recycle and buy some really good shit. Sam, welcome.
Hi.
Hello. Thank you for joining us.
Sure. So I'm Samantha Elias. I'm co-founder and CEO of the Vintage Twin, the world's first vintage brand.
Oh, let them know.
Oh, yeah.
How long you been around?
Yeah. About 10 years.
10 years. Yeah. Happy decade.
Oh, thanks. Yes. My twin sister and I started when we were 19. Basically, I grew up as a pretty basic bitch on Long Island.
Let them know.
And went off to the University of Michigan to study business and sustainability. And when I got there, I made some not tri-state area friends and discovered
tight.
Vintage. Came back to New York City, started wearing it exclusively, and I got a lot of compliments. Where did you get that?
Right.
And it was really just slapping us in the face. It was like 10 times a day. It's too much to ignore.
Wow.
Yeah. So we didn't. And we put together a vintage t-shirt sale in my mom's basement where all great businesses start. And we called it the
every single great business all time.
Starts in
and
mom's garage or
was
basement.
In the garage or basement.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm in the club.
I feel that.
So, yeah, we called it the Vintage Twin. I took some inventory back to my dorm room. Was doing the same thing. And
you were literally hawking t-shirts out of your dorm room.
Out of my personal closet.
You're Maddie's hero.
Yeah.
Yes, you are my hero.
Well, I think what makes it really heroic is that I was selling to, like, these super basic Long Island girls who I love dearly. They are my siblings
are
and cousins and all...
Right.
You know, but they were like allergic to vintage. They were there because it was the Vintage Twin, and that's
they were there for the brand.
That's right.
Despite the fact that there is a stigma around vintage of it being worn, smelly, old.
Right. And that's really how we came to develop our thesis around how a brand can fundamentally change the space, who's in it, and blur the lines between retail and resale.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Woo. So, badass.
Tell us a little bit about this movement that you guys are starting, because I'm familiar with the ThredUps of the world and the RealReals, as well as Nordstrom entering the space. So I'm very, very interested to hear how you guys are combating this idea that new fashion is the only thing that you should buy. And because, you know, vintage doesn't just incorporate your old rocker t-shirts or your Levi's jeans, it incorporates every piece of fashion.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's really important to think about, to, you know, drop your preconceived notions of what vintage means and open your mind up to maybe it's a little secondhand, maybe there's some legit vintage in there, which frankly is stuff from like 90s and early 2000s now. When it comes to the Vintage Twin, I wouldn't really think of us as like your amazing, magnificent pieces from the 60s and 70s, though there's a little sprinkle of that. What's dominating the space today are these. So obviously you have thrift stores. So $20 billion came from 18,000 thrift stores across America in 2018. And these are all like warehouse like settings where it's just a pretty brutal shopping experience. Mm-hmm. And then it's not actually that much different online today. So if in the thrift stores you're physically digging, online you're virtually digging, right? So you've got ThredUp on the low end. You've got like a social eBay approach with Depop right. and Poshmark in the middle. And then you've got the RealReal on the high end. But those are marketplaces, right? They're selling thousands and thousands of brands. And there's millions of items on each site to go through. So it's like part art, part science to mm-hmm. actually find what you're looking for, especially when you don't know what you're looking for.
We've all been there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this pattern we see over and over is like, this unsexy, overcomplicated space. We saw it with mattresses, right. luggage, and eyewear. And the pattern you see is this digital, insta-famous, celebrity-studded brand coming in and disrupting it and acting as a gateway for millennials and Gen Z into a space they really otherwise couldn't navigate. And that's what the Vintage Twin is about. That story has not been told in resale yet, and we are that brand. Wow. But, you know, We saw this whole 10 years ago, right? I mean, I was studying business. Sure, vintage is cool, but like at heart, I'm a business person. And it's not surprising to me that the whole still exists, and it's because there's so many barriers to entry, right. like what it takes to build a brand with one-off secondhand pieces. So we've kind of like built our moat around those barriers.
10-year moat.
That's right.
Let's go.
Yeah. So the first element is the supply chain. It's like super antiquated and obscure. It's all about
right,
relationships.
Where you get the goods from.
Yeah. So let me just give you some background. I'll pretend you know nothing about the secondhand economy. How do goods enter it? Mostly people drop in these drop boxes, like those big metal bins on a gas station corner. And what's donated there is called credential. And credentials a commodity like anything else. There's a price per pound that fluctuates with economic climate, seasonality, scarcity, et cetera. Who owns the credential? Whoever owns the Dropbox. Who owns the Dropbox? If it's not Salvation Army or Goodwill, these Dropboxes go back 3 and 4 generations and families. I own this corner. You own that corner. Super mafioso, fractionalized, antiquated stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Raggers. Jobbers.
Yes. And so the credential goes to a sorting facility called a rag house to be sorted. And from the rag house, you have the vast majority gets exported overseas. Then you have maybe between 2 and 5% going in these vintage rooms where I've had to like figure out how to navigate that and get my fair share. Mm-hmm. And then a tremendous amount gets cut up into rags or landfilled.
Right.
Yeah.
And it is equally as possible that the sorting process in the rag house tosses some of the gold because it looks like a damaged good that you could sell for, you know, $50, $100, you know.
That's exactly right. So, I mean, we call ourselves not the second most sustainable option as compared to being naked, but that's a very good line for Reformation, and I give them all the credit in the world. Mm. They're not actually the second most sustainable option because right. they're manufacturing things. And even though their materials are wonderful and eco-friendly, they're still manufacturing, and that's really wasteful. And the truth is there's trillions of items that exist today to be sold that look a lot like what they're making at Reformation. Fashion right. cycles, right?
Yep.
So we're kind of taking sustainability one step further and not only avoiding manufacturing by selling what already exists, but actually reworking things and salvaging items by over-dyeing and tie-dyeing and cutting and cropping that would otherwise be landfilled. So I feel pretty good about calling us the most sustainable brand on earth.
Yeah, I mean, you know, by definition of producing clothes, no matter if it's biodegradable or recycled materials, you are going to be causing more harm than something that already exists.
Yeah. And any remanufacturing we do is happening here in America, really mm-hmm. locally.
Right.
Creating jobs.
Right.
We feel good about that. But you asked me a question that I can't.
I'm going to ask you many questions.
All right. Let's go.
In the course of this pod. But first, we're going to take a commercial break. Our episode of Better World Today is sponsored by our very good friends at Smile Radio. Smileradio.fm on the Instagram. Please check them out. The Smile Podcast Studio is located at 24th and Lexington Avenue inside the Freehand Hotel. Please come have a look and check out Smile and Smile to Go. Some of the best restaurants, chicken and vegetarian and vegan options in New York City. SmileRadio.fm at Instagram. And we're back from our pre-recorded messaging with my radio face. You got that one. It took a second.
Yeah, it took. I kind of tune you out sometimes.
What do you mean sometimes?
All the time, the whole time.
It's how we get by. Shout out again to Dawn Gallagher.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Please check out that podcast. Maddie and I are married on it. I'm going to be trading on this all day. It's the only good news I have on Valentine's
Day. Okay, I'm officially stopped. I'm going to stop laughing at anything you say starting now.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Fart jokes. No, nothing.
That was it.
It works.
It's over.
We've hit a wall. Welcome to The Sad Truth About Rags, starring Maddie. See, gotcha.
Not laughing.
We are here, as many of you who are listening currently already know, with Samantha. Now, I have a couple of different questions as we are digging into the supply chain. Why and how do people drop things in bins? And how are we going to get them to recycle more? Are bins our only option?
And where? Where? In the country.
Yeah, Maddie's never seen a bin.
No, I've seen bins.
I'm not sure, but there are some websites where you can do like a bin locator. Is there a centralized website? Not really sure. My suspicion is not.
Mm-hmm.
But now that you're like aware of them, you'll probably take notice of them. They're everywhere.
There's like one in Brooklyn on South First. There's definitely more than one in Brooklyn, Henry.
But
also fair.
Yeah. So how are we going to recycle more? Look, ThredUp does a great job, right? They send you a clean out kit for free, which is just like one massive bag. Right. They give you about 12 cents for half your closet. But that's cool, right? I mean, they arrange to have it picked up, and 12 cents is better than no cents. And
you're actually recycling.
That's right.
It's much better than putting it in a plastic bag to go into a landfill, which then creates methane. As it turns out, textile waste is the third largest producer of methane in the world.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
Well, I think fashion is the second most polluting industry in the world as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nobody's laughing.
Yeah, no one's laughing on that one. No,
not that funny.
Yeah.
So what does the future of clothing recycling then look like? Do you think it is this kind of ThredUp model where we're just picking up from people's door?
Or is a hologram of Marie Kondo going to come to everybody's house and tell us to clean out our closets?
Look,
Marie.
The way I see it, and I have my own little theories, hopefully Jeff Bezos is listening. But Amazon is in 100 million homes every single week, multiple times a week, and their delivery people are leaving empty-handed. Right. Every single one of those homes has the plastic bag in the back of the closet or under the bed. And
it's somewhat of a logistics lift that you're proposing, but it makes total sense.
Total sense. But by the way,
they will be going back to a facility at some point.
That's exactly
right.
So the
whole thing is connected.
That's right. And it doesn't have to start there, right? What's anyone's barrier to entry coming into the supply chain? It's the credential. It's the Dropbox. But remember, I own this corner, you own that corner. It's a real estate play. So what I see is this $20 billion industry that it's completely devoid of technology, where they're selling their Lululemon leggings for the same price as their Old Navy leggings. So much value being left on the table. I don't really think Walmart and Amazon are going to continue to let a nonprofit organization run our secondhand economy. I think they're going to come in and leverage their physical footprint and take one parking spot in their 5,000 stores and put a digital Dropbox there.
What's a digital Dropbox?
You open the canister, you put your stuff in, it weighs it, it emails you a donation receipt.
Today,
if you want a donation, this is my theory, but it doesn't exist today. Mm-hmm. I tried for a patent, but it's a long story.
Damn.
Can't get it. Yeah. It's all right.
Okay.
I'll be fine.
I'm going to come out the other side on this one.
Yeah, I'll be all right. So today, if you want a donation receipt, you have to park at the Salvation Army, wait online, fill out a form with a pen and paper, scan it, send it. No one does it. That's why they use these non-digital Dropboxes.
And the Dropboxes are problematic as they are subject to weather. And if the clothing gets wet, they traditionally don't sort it.
Yeah.
So you have a faulty, flawed.
Well, it's not like a, it's not like an open bin, right?
Oh, no, no,
it's
no,
like
it's,
a weatherproof thing.
Super, it's super or is common. It crappy? It's a metal bin. It's a crappy metal bin.
Okay.
But it's super
yeah,
common.
They're like really got old it. And rusty.
Got
and,
it.
Yeah. Okay. Also, there's
snow,
like,
then melts.
Right. Okay.
All, there's also crazy stories of like a
people
lot of
people living
deaths.
In there.
No, like they get stuck. It's oh. a whole. It's really yeah. It's awful.
Oh my god.
I digress.
Yeah.
So,
I'm down to never hear that sound again.
Sorry.
Did a cat just die on air?
I was imitating death.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Good, thank you.
I have to, you know, the people at home.
So I think this Walmart Amazon owned credential, right? You're going to Whole Foods. You're going to Walmart anyway. Bring your giveaway bag with you, is going to go to an intelligent sorting facility.
Well, we're not only talking about clothing at this point, right? You are noting the fact that the majority of these 600 raggers that there are nationwide, if they're even still 600 left, are sorting not only, and this is true for Salvation Army and Goodwill as well, not only clothing and credential used, but they also are getting things like bikes, home goods, electronics, basically
yeah.
everything that's in the
and
household.
And obviously shoes and accessories. Yeah, look, there's a little bit of a problem with like dropping china and like
right.
pretty ashtrays and porcelain like into a drop box. I think there are for sure some solutions to be had. But yeah, I think it's going to go to an intelligent sorting facility. Maybe that's
who can then resell and reallocate to people who are in the area and reduce shipping.
That's right. But also just like, bring some technology in and get some customer matching in place. Get the Lululemon leggings in the Soho location.
Customer matching. Would you like to tell us a little bit about the technology available at Vintage Twin today?
Sure. So basically, if you look at like fintech, right, and you look at financial markets, they're able to develop all this stellar technology and build crazy AI and machine learning models because the data is so structured. Across the whole industry. But that does not exist in fashion. So what we've done is started to kind of codify fashion across all categories in the form of a data entry system. So like the way we use it is to master the arbitrage that is price, right? So like what separates our $35 denim dress from the $65 denim dress? It's not the designer. Most of these designers don't even exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's the zippers and the buttons and the hem and the wash and all
right.
these bizarre nuances that unless you spent 10 years on the sales floor selling this stuff to people, you couldn't fathom actually impacts the price.
Mm.
But if we're collecting that data and we can see this item with these details sold for this much in 2 days and XYZ in 4 days, that's pattern recognition 101. And that's how we can learn to really optimize the price. So similarly, we use that data for customer matching. That means like, so on our website, it's very service oriented. It's all about personal styling. We're solving that pain point that exists in secondhand, which is all the digging.
Mm-hmm.
So you come online, you take a personal styling quiz, and we send you, it's like Stitch Fix without the shipping. So we send you a collection of items that we think you're going to like. There's a human element. There's definitely an algorithmic element. But this way you're looking through 5 or 15 pages instead of 5,000.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's pretty good stuff.
Yes.
Gets a lot more intelligent at scale, by the way. But until it does, there's this algorithmic foundation that is a lot of my kind of codified experience and intuition. How do I decide out of all the random t-shirts and sweatshirts, like which ones to show your basic girl versus like your hipster girl? Well, I know from a lot of selling that basic girls like roses and tigers and skulls and beach themes. Henry is wearing
first
a
off,
beach Cal theme. Dude.
I love beach themes.
That's
Henry
right.
is roses. Basic girl.
That's fine. And I'm going to show you the t-shirts that have those things on them. Mm-hmm. But if I don't collect that data first, then I can't arbitrate that way.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we're just kind of building the language that we believe is going to be able to create a lot more value for the customer on the customer experience and, you know, the business too, to be able to resell the tremendous variety that exists in like secondhand, which is that fashion from spanning several decades from thousands of designers.
Wow.
Yeah.
So out of curiosity, do you feel like vintage is currently represented well in the marketplace with the diversity that it has? Meaning, why aren't there subsections of vintage that we talk about more frequently, either from different styles, from different eras, from different clothing type, in the same way that we talk about, you know, fashion currently? And I guess fashion is also ultimately segmented by its labels.
Yeah. Look, I think fashion, look, since the beginning of time, fashion cycles, right? And it used to be that in the 80s, you were seeing a resurgence of things from the mid-40s and things like that. Now it's cycling on a face at a pace faster than any designer could possibly stay on top of. And so each designer, when they put out a runway show, they're going to decide if it's 70s inspired or 80s inspired or what. But because of social media and Instagram, if Bella Hadid is wearing like a very 60s outfit and Selena Gomez is wearing something that is like Monica Geller, very 90s, now they're both in style and the customer wants all of those things. So that's been awesome for the Vintage Twin because we're the breadth of our inventory is actually serving the customer really well.
Right.
And we don't have to decide 14 months in advance because our stuff is being produced overseas, you know, what the styles we're going to double down on. So we have the advantage of like super fast lead times and just the breadth of what's available. There's so much available. I also think
it's tough to quantify, but is there a way that we can give the listener a sense of just how much of a depth and dearth there is in, I'm remiss to even call it vintage, in resold?
I would just encourage everyone to think about their own closet, right? And like, what percent of the items in your closet?
That's interesting. There are 250 million closets on the market.
Right? Yeah. And what percent of it did you buy in the last 18 months? What percent of it have you worn in the last 18 months? And what about all the stuff that came before that? Where did it go? What did you do with it? And then there's this crazy world of estate and tag sales, which is ripe for disruption. Yeah. Really excited to do that because we're in America and thousands of homes get liquidated every day. And 1-800-JUNK doesn't do a fantastic job of picking out the vintage and selling it for what it's worth. So 1-800-JUNK, if you're listening, 1-800-Vintage is coming and we're going to partner one day. We're going there.
We have to take our second commercial break give our thanks and shout out to every single company that has been on Better World. Something very, very magical happened today where one company heard about another company and asked to be connected. It was Future Earth and Dawn Gallagher. And what we have endeavored to build here over the course of the last 2 years and change is a community of great companies supporting and helping each other to cause the consumer to vote a little bit better with their dollar. So we would like to thank Package Free, Blue Land, all of the great guests that we've had who are out there trying to make this world a little bit better. If you would like more information, please check out our site because we have all of the episodes listed and their bios listed. And it's kind of searchable thanks to Squarespace, betterworld.media. So thank you again, everyone who's been on the podcast. We really appreciate you here at Better World. And we're back to Maddie's great laughless, joyless mood.
That was a nice V-Day, spreading the love.
Did you feel my little love letter? Because that's what was going on.
Yeah.
Okay. I tried not to make something creepy once, and I still can't please you.
Too. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Put them in a corner.
Let's dial back for a second.
I think
we took something for granted, which is that your average consumer, even above average, like Ivy League educated consumers, and I talk to a lot of them because they're running the venture capital funds that I'm talking to every day, don't understand how vintage is sustainable.
Like what?
Wait.
There's a disconnect.
Time out.
No, there's a disconnect. There's this.
Let's talk about the first part of the process.
Talk
about the manufacturing part of the process first.
Okay. I'm bringing this up not to denigrate any of those people, but more importantly, to make sure everyone listening understands how and why vintage is inherently sustainable. when you go to Zara or Forever 21 or any mass market retailer, even Gucci, they are manufacturing textiles and garments overseas. A lot of waste comes from that whole process, dyeing and textile production. You know,
water used.
Yeah. And then on the low end, you've got some very serious issues around labor practices. Mm-hmm. And you've got a lot of people in Bangladesh and Pakistan, basically slaves of the textile industry.
So poor social, economic, and ecological.
That's right. And every time you buy a new garment, you're contributing to that. You're voting, as Henry said. And when you buy something that already exists, you're taking your wallet and you're taking share away from that world. And so by contributing to secondary demand, right, which is buying things that already exist, you are in effect lessening primary demand, which lessens all of those ecological, social, and economic detriments that it causes.
Yeah. And you might look at also, as an additional note, brands that are adopting sustainable practices, and you might say, oh, well, I can buy new if it's a sustainable, maybe their supply chain is circular, maybe they don't package in plastic, maybe they have hemp, maybe whatever it is. But still, there is nothing more sustainable than a garment that already exists.
That's right.
Continue.
Yeah, so I just thought perhaps some editing can happen and we can start there. But I think it's a really important.
She's already shooting us down.
It's my fault. I should have started there. But I think it gets taken for granted. A lot of people just don't draw the connection between vintage and sustainability.
I am no stranger to two women shaking their heads at me in the same room behind microphones. But I would like to point out that what you have just identified is an epidemic in not only the Ivy League side, it's in the world at large, mm-hmm. where people do not realize that just because the economics of fast fashion make sense for them, it doesn't mean that the economics make sense for everybody or the long term, nor do they recognize that vintage and or thrift, I'll lump them both together, have significant economic advantages. Both in the cost and in the durability of the product.
That's right.
The majority of the products that you build, that you sell, have been built to last significantly longer than most of the products that are made today.
They are inherently higher quality.
Right.
Besides the fact that it's pretty cool.
Movement?
Like, what?
What's this movement? You got a movement. I'm feeling it.
Well,
is it called Harmless?
Look, it's called Harmless Fashion. Hashtag Harmless Fashion. You heard it here first. Nice. But just to, like, dial back to, like, consumer benefits for a second. What started this brand, remember, was the compliments. This is what happens. It's this phenomenon that has always driven our business. When you wear something that's not mass marketed, that people aren't seeing everywhere else, you're going to get compliments whether you want them or not.
Mm-hmm. Because you're an individual at that point, which is the entire point of fashion, I was told.
And it's something different. It's so obviously something different. My compliments didn't all come from basic girls or all basic guys. There were people of all ages, genders, ethnicities complimenting the same garment just because it was different. And that is not obvious. You can't find that outside of secondhand. And so it's internal.
So encapsulate this Harmless Fashion for me, because it's got a couple of major points which you have just listed. When you say harmless, you're not harming the folks in Bangladesh.
That's
who are undergoing labor.
You're not harming the environment.
You're not harming the environment.
And it's really that simple. I mean, it is the only form of harmless fashion.
Because you are significantly more cost effective than the alternatives at that
grading
class.
And the stuff is one of a kind, which is cool and what everyone deserves. Mm-hmm. But
and you're not harming feelings because everybody looks so great and gets compliments.
That's right. That's very nice, Henry. I like that.
Why do I constantly feel like I'm in a room with two of my third grade teachers?
Because you're a third grader.
A real layup there.
It's, and sorry to say it, but we say we're harmless fashion because every other form of fashion is very harmful. And this is the only alternative.
Even when we are making sustainable garments, there is still a cost. And we are encouraging, if you have to buy new, and everybody does buy new, that you look at some of the new sustainable providers. We've had a few on. Shout out to Nadam, who is making cashmere sustainably and better. I do understand that we as a society will continue to purchase new garments, that there is a demand that can't be shifted. But I would like to encourage every single listener to take a look at thevintagetwin.com and just notice the breadth and depth and categories even of fashion that is available.
Yeah, but also you don't have to shop it yourself because I'll be honest, it can be pretty overwhelming.
Unless take... you're like me and it's like a fun thing, but right. exhausting.
So right, what's yeah. What's my little option there to be styled?
So you take the quiz yeah. right on the homepage. There's a 90-second quiz. Click a couple pictures of what you'd actually wear. Maybe tell me your favorite sport team or school, and I will send you a few pages to look at that is filled with stuff you will actually like.
And what is the link love to it. That quiz?
TheVintageTwin.com.
Hello.
I love it.
We're going to talk about five or so things, as we love to always talk about, that you, our listener, can do to make the world better related to clothing. I would like to point out, number one, we have identified today that many new garments have a very, very high ecological cost, but we didn't actually specify which ones. Cotton is one, cotton and denim in particular are two of the most harmful to the environment. I would recommend that you stay away from brand new cotton denim if you can, unless, of course, it is sustainably sourced in some manner, which we will talk about in new episodes. Also, I would like to point out at this point that we haven't talked about some of the man-made fibers, which degrade very quickly. These are the rayons, certain...
Wait, which don't degrade?
Which degrade very quickly into microplastics and then don't degrade at all.
Right, right. Let's not, yeah.
Right. We don't want to confuse anybody on
right.
it. Right.
They shed quickly, but they never go away. They shed into microfibers. Yes.
And they go into the water stream through your laundry that are horrible. So we don't recommend, stay towards natural fibers is a really, really great way of making the world better. Samantha, would you like to take a swing at a couple, even though in pre-production you told me that I could handle the whole thing? Meanwhile, back on
okay,
the spot.
Okay, wait. One, stay away from virgin cotton and
virgin cotton
denim.
And virgin denim.
Two, stay or away from man-made petroleum-based fibers.
Anything that is being manufactured that has a high ecological cost. And it is very, right. very simple to do a little bit of research and find out. But just bear in the back of your mind that cotton, denim, high cost.
Mm-hmm. And look, if you're a brand snob, and I like expensive shoes. I like fancy shoes myself.
Can't blame you.
Yeah. I don't know. My grandma told me that
you're not
fancy
getting judged
shoes
here.
Are important. Right. So what can I say? But go on the Real Real.
Yeah.
Buy them there. They're a fraction of the price, and you can get anything you want.
I bought some Stella McCartney thigh highs on the Real Real. Yeah. It was amazing.
I mean, it's a bit of an art and a science yeah. to shop, but if you can do it, it's great. And just look for other options. If you're going to like a game and you need a Patriots sweatshirt, come to the Vintage Twin. And if we don't have it, I guess you can go to eBay, but look for alternatives whenever you can.
Okay, that's three. Four.
Jorts.
Jorts. Buy vintage jorts.
Buy vintage
yeah, those you can, yeah. Those you can buy online.
Dude, there's so many vintage jorts. It's crazy.
Yeah. So we're famous for our genius bar in person
right, right.
where you can genius like bar. Come and it's this magic trick where we don't measure you. We just look at you and pick out the perfect pair of jeans.
Love it.
There's a little too much leg to worry about to do that online, but we do that with shorts. So if you're not in New York, you can do it with jorts online.
Jorts.
And
look at how jorts brought us to an important point.
She yeah. doesn't get it. I say jorts like it's if it's like ah jorts.
Well, like it's a word.
Yeah,
it's a word.
It's a word, but I like
she colloquialized
coined it,
it
oh, as a like a okay. like a
like the way
yeah.
I say woof.
Yeah,
which is so weird.
Yeah, jorts is better.
No okay. one gets it anyway. Everyone pretends to.
We
no
can
one
pretend
gets
that the jorts and the first rule of cotton are two separate rules.
Yeah,
fair.
We'll just pretend. what's the fifth? Just okay,
I
yes.
have one.
Recycle yes. your clothing.
Wait, she just said she has one.
Yeah, I mean for sure recycle your clothing. Find a Dropbox or send it to ThredUp. It's really easy.
Or TerraCycle.
Or what?
TerraCycle.
Or TerraCycle.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. But like I had to buy onesies for my son and I felt really bad about like ordering them from Carter's. But Zara actually had like some ecological cotton or something. I don't know. Just look for the next best alternative. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest. I wanted to buy new onesies for my son. He like sleeps in them. I was thankful to Zara for having like a better option.
And I think that that speaks to another, we'll do six, which is do not become subject to greenwashing and be a really avid reader and someone who looks into what these brands are really talking about, because a lot of brands are hopping on board and saying we're sustainable and means nothing. So
read up. Yeah, I think that all comes from the fundamental understanding that anytime you're producing a new garment, it's harmful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oof, we did it.
Look, everybody, high fives all around. I think that you guys are great, even though nobody likes me in this room today.
Henry, I'll just give it to you. You're great. You're great.
It's a Valentine's Day miracle, people.
My eyes just rolled all the way back.
Well,
my eyes are on the other floor, the wall behind me right now.
I'm feeling everything.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you
for joining us.
This is going to air in March.
Oh no.
I'm Henry Lynn from Better World.
I am Madeline Wallace.
And thank you for listening and helping to make the world better.